Excuse me. How's that? We'll call this meeting order at 6 p.m., the regular city council meeting of April 11th, 2023. And Mr. Tungle, would you read the mission statement, please?
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Yes, and it's these this meeting and the subsequent ones are going to test that excellent stewardship of government. Madam Clerk, may we call the roll, please?
Certainly, Mr. Vice Mayor. Mr. Bell.
Here.
Ms. Coleman.
Here.
Ms. Luby.
Here.
Mr. Nicholson.
Here.
Mr. Robinson.
Present.
Mr. Tungle.
Here.
And Mayor Tudyakov is absent.
And yes, Mayor Tudyakov is excused. We have a quorum, six council members. Please stand and join me in a Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Visitors, we have Mr. Wilson here in the school. We have a whole bunch of other school folks because it's a really important meeting. Later when our new superintendent gets in, Kimberly Hanch, I will introduce her. But at this point, can I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
Move to adopt the agenda. Second.
Moved by Coleman, seconded by Luby. If there are any objections, hearing no objections, the agenda is adopted. Now I may have a motion to approve, a motion and a second to approve the minutes of the March 28th meeting.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of, I don't think it's March 28th, is it? Do we have a typo? Oh, it is March 28th, I'm sorry. I'm thinking it was... Never mind. I'm in a different month. Excuse me. Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of March 28th, 2023. Thank you.
Second.
Moved by Luby, seconded by, who was that? Nicholson, sorry. Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the proposed minutes are approved. And reports, we have the financial February 2023 proprietary fund overview by Mr. Darnell. Let's turn it over to the assistant or the interim city manager.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight we have a presentation from our acting finance director, Clay Darnell, who is on Zoom. Clay?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, we'll be talking about the unaudited financial information for the 8 months that ended February 28th of 2023. And this month's review will include an overview of the proprietary funds. And then we've got some graphical information showing 10-year trends. Also, this month's report includes a summary of the projected and actual results for all of the entities through the end of the year. So what I'd like to do is begin on my PDF, page 3. And this is what we're going to be talking about. So a lot of the things that I'm going to be mentioning are right from the department highlights. Let's go to page 3, please. Thank you. And there you can see that revenues, for the general government were budgeted to be $30,314,000. Actually, year to date through February, which is 67% of the year evenly weighted, we've got $31.4 million or 104% of our budgeted revenues so far. And of course, you can see up there on the second and third items, our AK Fisheries business and AK Fisheries resource landing tax have been received 100%. We don't expect to receive any more for the year. for the fiscal year. Continuing forward to the total operating expenditures, we have $31.2 million budgeted. We've spent $18.1 million year to date, and that's 58% of the budgeted amount, once again, with 67% elapsed. So our revenues are ahead of the estimate. Our expenses are behind approximately 9%. And then down to the bottom where it says the net surplus or deficit, there it is. We budgeted for an $8.6 million deficit this year, but so far year to date, we're at $6.2 million. And then the last thing I'll talk about today is I'll show you a summary that shows the actual $6.2 million and where we're projected to be at the end of the year. But we actually are going to do a lot better than the $8.6 million deficit that you see in front of you. On the next page, page 4 of my PDF, you'll find the 1% sales tax revenue fund. There's our revenue budgeted at $3.8 million. We've received $3.7 million, which is 99% of the estimate year to date. So the 1% sales tax fund is going to be in good shape. We're going to, at the end of the year, we've spent, budgeted and spent $3.8 million. So we budgeted a deficit of $35,000 on the total line there. Actually, we're at a loss of $91,477, except we've spent all the money so far that's been appropriated. And so we should be in good shape in this fund by year end. Next, the bed tax fund. We budgeted $175,000 in revenues. We've received $120,608, which is 69%. So it's slightly ahead of the evenly weighted estimate of 67%. Then there's our expenses, the Unalaska CVB. We budgeted $210,000 and we spent $140,000, right at 67%, because we budget that we pay it evenly throughout the year. So we know that we won't go over the $210,000 year to date unless there's a budget amendment of the council authorizing us to do that. Continuing forward, the E911 Enhancement Special Revenue Fund, we budgeted $75,000. We've got $53,800 received so far. We're at 72% of the budget. And so we're slightly ahead on revenues, and we haven't spent any money, but we appropriated $75,000. So we're in good shape in this fund. Next, the Tobacco Tax Special Revenue Fund. We budgeted $750,000, and we've received $493,000 so far, which is 66% of the estimate. And for community support, we budgeted $88,000, and we've spent $58,000. But we'll be right in line with budget for the expense here, because they're spent evenly throughout the year, just as they were authorized by the council. Are there any questions on these funds before I move forward? On page 5 of the... I'm sorry.
So we still have about three months before the end of fiscal year, 2.5 months.
Four months. Yes, 4 months of financial information.
June, at the end of June, right?
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Any other comments?
On page 5.
Proceed, Mr. Darnell.
Thank you, I'm sorry. On page 5, you'll find the operating monthly summaries, beginning with for the proprietary funds. So we're going to look at the proprietary funds, but after each one, we'll try to go to the look at the 10-year revenue expense graph, so you can see some trend information for these utilities or for all these proprietary funds. And in the electric fund, our revenues were budgeted at $16.6 million. We've received $13.6 million. Year to date, which is 82% of the estimate, with 67% of the time expired. So we're ahead on revenues, in the electric utility fund. And we've talked about that before. That's related to the price of diesel. On the expense side, our total operating expenses were budgeted at $18.1 million. We spent $10 million year to date, which is 55% of the estimate, which is 12% lower than the budgeted amount if we spent that money evenly. So we're ahead on revenues in the electric utility fund, and we are underspent on expenses. Moving forward to the total net operating loss line of $6.3 million. That's what we appropriated. But year to date, we've only lost $67,363. So we expect to be, I'll show you projections later, but we expect to be a lot better off than what was budgeted. And now if we could, Margie, I'd like to go to the electric fund graph. It's on page 15 of my package, but not your package. There it is. Okay. So here's 10 years of information, but I did want to note that 2022 and 2023, that's just budgeted information. I wasn't able to update this information with the actual results for 2022 and time here. So both of those are budgets. So there you can see that the revenue line is blue, right? And the expense line is orange. And it shows that the revenue line, the trend is decreasing, right? Across I think that's just the average across all those years. Just the trend. And then the expenses are increasing. And operating expenses that are included here include personnel expense. Not like last night where we just talked about operating expenses increasing and we talked about personnel and operating separately, but this operating expense amount does include personnel and operating. Okay, Margie, can we go back to the water fund? In the water fund, our revenues were budgeted at $2.7 million. Year to date, we received $1.4 million, or 53% of the estimate, with 67% of the time expired. So we're behind on revenues in the water fund. Our total operating expenses were budgeted to be $2.5 million, and they're at $1.2, only 49% of the estimate. So we're under spent significantly there to help offset some of the revenue reduction. And then on the last line, it's not titled. See the $2.4 million? That's where we were budgeted for the loss, and we're at $1.9 million now. And we'll take a look, the last thing that we look at to see where we're projected to be by the end of the year. But I think it's slightly better than the 2.4. Can we go to the water fund graph, please? Thank you, Margie. And there you can see in the water fund, the revenue's holding pretty level. But our expenses are increasing. And we know that the expenses are increasing because we know we've had an increase in personnel expenses and personnel costs, right? Salaries and wages and benefits and those types of things. So that's all I have for this graph. I would like to say that in 2017, the reason for the negative capital there was a return of capital unspent. So if amounts are appropriated for a project and they're approved as part of the budget and they don't get spent, that money comes back. And so that's how that's expressed right there. Just that number is capital expense and transfers for capital. So if they send money back, that's how it's expressed here. I just wanted to explain that. Moving back to the wastewater proprietary fund, our revenues were $2.7 million. Actually received $1.8 million, or 67% of the estimated amount. So we're right in line year to date, with 67% of the time expired. Our total operating expenses were budgeted to be $3 million, We spent 1.6 million, which is 56%. So we're underspent in the wastewater proprietary fund. Moving to the last line there that's not titled, our net loss was budgeted to be 1.5 million. So far, we've lost 721,000. But I think in this fund, we're going to be right at or a little bit better than our budgeted loss amount. And for the, let's look at the wastewater graph. Here you can see that our revenue also is level or pretty close to being level right there. Wait just a second, is that, it's slightly, looks like that's slightly increasing. I'm sorry, the description's inaccurate. And then the expense trend is increasing. Returning to the solid waste proprietary fund. Our revenues were budgeted for 2.8 million. We've received 2 million. So we're at 71% of the budgeted amount with 67% of the time expired. Our total operating expenses are 3.1 million budgeted. We've spent 1.4 million or 47% of the budget. So we were a little bit ahead on revenues. We've really had some savings on spending, right? Approximately 20% there. We'd expect to be at around 67%. Then on the net earnings line, we budgeted a loss of 1.5 million year to, for the year, and we're at 420,000 so far year to date. Looking at the solid waste proprietary fund graph. Yeah, our revenue, the revenues are increasing and our expense trend is also increasing. Returning to page 7, the Ports and Harbors Proprietary Fund. Our revenues are budgeted to be 8.5 million. Year to date, they're 5.6 million or 66%, right in line with where we need to be. And then our total operating expenses were budgeted to be 6 million. We spent 3.7 million or 63% of the budget. So we're in line with our revenues year to date and slightly less than some savings there on our expenditures. On the net loss line, we had budgeted to be 4.5 million loss and we're at 3.6 million. And we'll take a look at this and see where we're projected to be. I think we're going to be right in line with that 4.5 million at the end of the year. Then here's the 10-year graph. Our revenue is increasing and our expenses are also increasing. And then we've got a note there that our revenues aren't sufficient to cover the expenses. And this is consistent with what we saw, what we talked about yesterday on the budget. The revenues are enough to cover the operating expenses minus depreciation, right? We're not covering the depreciation here, which is leading to the loss. Returning to the Airport Proprietary Fund, page 7. You can see our revenues were budgeted at 560,000. We've received 333,000 year to date, which is 59%. So we're behind. We're behind about 8% on our airport revenues. On the operating expense side, we budgeted for 598,000 and we spent 419,000. So we're slightly ahead of the 67% metric. Then our net earnings and loss were budgeted to be 338,000. We're at 293,000. And I think projected we're going to be at or above the $338,000 level. And moving to the airport graph to take a look at those revenues and expenses. Our revenues are increasing slightly, right? Beginning at a level of a little bit less than a half a million up to 559,000 budgeted for 2023. So our revenues are increasing and our expense trend is decreasing. expenses have decreased significantly for the airport fund over this 10-year period. Returning to the housing proprietary fund, our revenues were budgeted at $258,000. We've received $151,000, which is 59%. So we're about 8% behind where we would expect to be. Our operating expenses were budgeted at $406,000. We're at $242,000 in actual expense, or 60% of the budgeted amount. So our revenues are behind, but our spending is behind also. Then our net earnings and loss was budgeted to be $343,000, and we're at $220,000. Looking at the housing fund 10-year graph. It's on page 21 of the PDF. There we go. You see that the revenue trend is pretty level. Expenses are increasing. Revenues aren't sufficient to cover the expenses in the housing fund. And the 2024 budget has an operating subsidy proposed. So the next thing I'd like to look at is on page 22. That's where you'll see the summary of the results. Last page of the PDF, there it is. So I want to show you what's going on here. These are the numbers that we just looked at in the first group on the year to date. And what we did is we went through and reviewed that change in net position for everyone. And these are the numbers that agree to what we just looked at. Then I've taken those numbers and projected those to the end of the year to see where we're going to be. And I really wanted to start right there on the electric fund. So I wanted to show you, this is how the information on the outlines developed on the monthly. This is how I can make those statements there. If you look at the electric utility fund, you can see that in the third bolded column where it says projected to June 30th, we've got $126,000 of income right there. We're projected on or budgeted to be at a $6.3 million loss. Now we know that the increase in diesel fuel prices have really helped us here, but this is how I project to the end of the year. And it's nothing more. It's not seasonally adjusted. It just says, hey, if we continue to earn revenues and expend the money at the same ratio that we have over the first 8 months, then at the end of the over the next four, these will be the results. And the $126,000 will be where we are, which is better than the 6.3 deficit that we suggested or appropriated. So for the water fund, just reviewing here, the water fund, we thought we would be at $2.4 million at the end of the year. And this shows a projected amount of $2.2 million. So it's slightly better, okay? Then in wastewater, we thought we would be at 1.5. And then this projection shows we're only going to be at 1.1. So a little better than the estimate. In solid waste, also 1.5 was where we thought we'd be. But solid waste is going to be at 481. So approximately a third. We're doing better. And remember, in solid waste, the way that we did that was through a reduction in the spending, or less spending than we had planned. For ports and harbors, we thought we'd be at a deficit of 4.5 for the year, and we're only going to be at 4.3. For the airport, we thought we were going to be at $338,000. We had appropriated deficit, and that's going to be slightly more, right? $437,000. And finally, for the housing fund, we had a budgeted deficit of $343,000, and looks like we're going to be a little bit better based on these projections, $334,000. So this concludes the monthly financial and the proprietary fund overview, and I'm prepared to answer questions as needed.
All right, thank you, Mr. Darnell. We take this time to recognize Kimberly Hench. So she's our new superintendent. So, and we failed to do that last night. Yeah, sorry. But anyway, for the council, do we have any questions on the presentation by Mr. Darnell? Ms. Luby?
So I'm looking at the projected to the end of the year, and I noticed there's nothing in there for revenues for the tobacco tax. Is there a reason for that?
Yes, I can tell you my reason. I didn't project it if I didn't have it. I don't have a good feel for how the tobacco tax is being earned right now. Yeah, on the projection, I think the discussion was, if you'll remember, it's that this tax is paid when the wholesaler brings it, when they bring it on the island. So it's not as tobacco sales occur like you would think. So it's not like sales tax. It's more intermittent. So I didn't estimate it because I just didn't have a good basis for doing so.
Okay, that makes sense. I just know that there's a quarter coming up here that we would be filing on, but you're right. You wouldn't be able to tell what they've brought in because they may bring nothing in. So, okay.
You're right. Yeah, I think it's reasonable that there would be some. I just can't reasonably estimate it.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I was just curious why it wasn't there. And the other question is, and I don't know if it's so much as a question, but I'm just looking at the general fund revenues coming in. And I'm kind of looking at the sales tax. I've kind of been looking at sales tax all along here. But if you look at your projected 1% sales tax coming in, that kind of gives a real good picture of what our 2% is in the general fund as well. And so the 1% looks like we're gonna hit 6.5 million? Is that what you're looking at the end of the year, is how much we're going to bring in the 1%?
Well, it would be, if the number there is one third, so it would be twice the number that's presented there. Right. So the 2.6, so it'd be, yeah, approximately 5 million more. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. And so then if you translate that to the general fund, I'm thinking that we're looking at 13 million in sales tax in the general fund, which is in over budget as well, from what we budgeted by about $7 million almost. Is that correct?
Absolutely. No, I apologize. I've just got the summary here. So, but underneath this summary, I did estimate every one of those. So there would be I just would have taken the sales tax 7.5 and divided by 8 and multiplied it by 4 to get the total. But you're right. I mean, we would definitely have additional sales tax funds toward the end of the year. I mean, we're 100%. We have 100% of the budget, but as you know, we've got 4 more months of sales tax receipts.
Right, right. And, you know, we just went through a season, which is a pretty, you know, there's a lot of activity going on January, February, and March, which is going to count for, you know, the final sales tax for the end of the year. So I'm just looking at what the revenues coming in are, and they're going to be, you know, way more than we budgeted. So, and then I'm also looking at what the cost of living is, because we're talking budgets and everything for everybody. And just kind of point out, you know, from 2021 to FY23, you know, the amount of sales tax collected, we collected $7 million in 2021, and we're looking at almost $13 million in 2023. So now, whether that's sustained or not, I don't know that that will happen, but that's a 54% increase. Oh, go ahead, Margie.
Mr. Mayor, may I make a comment?
Yes, go ahead.
So on sales tax, we have to remember that the next revenue that we get is going to be for the second or for the first quarter, January, February, March, mm-hmm. is due in the month of April.
Correct.
That'll be the end of our receipts for sales tax. Second quarter, which is April, May, and June, will be received in the next fiscal year.
Right.
And I think you might, Clay, you can tell us whether you account for that back into the current fiscal year or not, but it's not physically received until the next fiscal year. Do we put quarter two back into FY23, Clay, or do we account for that in FY24?
That is a great point, and that's exactly what we do. And Councilman Luby and I had a brief conversation about this, but I never circled back around. Yes, this actually has an estimate for the quarter that we're in. So these numbers, at least for sales tax, it's on an accrual basis, so it's not on what actually was received this year. And we've estimated a quarter, so we do. In at the end of the fiscal year, we bring those third quarter receipts back into the second quarter, and those are calendar quarters, which is, of course, is our fourth fiscal quarter.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And it's kind of the same thing. Me and Margie were having this conversation about earlier. In January or so, I was getting things a little bit. I was thinking that the first quarter of FY24 was coming into that quarter, but it was actually, it had something to do with the last quarter, sorry. But today, I am talking about January, February, March, those sales tax revenues earned will be in FY23. And that's where I'm, you know, it's a busy time. It's probably the busiest time of the whole year. So I kind of feel like that those revenues will come to light. So I just wanted to point out that that's a 54% increase, which means that our cost of goods have gone up 54% this last year. It kind of reflects that it doesn't matter if it's fuel from boats, if it's, you know, the cost of groceries or, you know, whatever it is, but it translates into a percentage and that's across the board for everybody. So I just kind of wanted to point that out. Thank you.
So it's not quite, because this city for this last, at least since 2007, is when it was like, get back on after leaving for a while, we've always had over $6 or $7 million in excess sales tax came in. So that you can't equate that to that 54% because this year is 54% higher. We've always budgeted conservatively, and that's always been the case. So
right, and I'm not looking at the budget. I'm actually looking at actuals. So I'm looking at the actual revenue taken in 2021.
Right.
And the actual revenue that we're taking in now. So that mm-hmm. kind of does go towards what the cost of goods are here. So and whether that's sustained, a lot of that has to do with the cost of fuel. Right. We know that, but that affects everything that we buy. And hopefully that will go down. You know, we don't know if it will or how much it will, but anyway, I thought it was just important to note, because as we're going through community grants and the budget for the city, and we're going to go through the school tonight, as we go through everything, it's just kind of important to note that just how much the cost of living has gone up. So, and sales tax is a good way to reflect that, just because it's based on a percentage. We didn't increase the sales tax. You know, it really does reflect what the cost of goods, you know, how much they have increased. So I just kind of wanted to say that.
No doubt the cost of goods have gone up. Is there any other council members? Mr. Tungle.
Yeah. Thank you for the presentation there, Mr. Darnell. It's nice to see, even though we got a lot of cut on the quota and everything, and the revenue stays ahead on what we budgeted. I think that's a big plus, and I think we can still afford supporting this grant. And I think it's still gonna keep going. I don't think we're gonna lose a lot of revenues. Looking at the future, I think. They're not really gonna cut. I know the crab season got cut off, but with the price of fuel, I think it helps a lot with the revenue that came in. That the last previous years, it really went up. That's why we see a big spike in there. But I think we're still gonna have this this fishing industry is still going to support us in here for a few more years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tungle. Anybody else? I'll just make a comment. You know, when we see revenues increase in our proprietary funds, that means we're collecting more from our residents, and their bills are higher. So it'd be nice to be able to keep those at kind of a minimum. I know it's tough to project, but like I said, when we see excess revenues like that, it's revenues that we don't necessarily need to be getting. So, but I appreciate the work that the electric utility does. And so one of the things is with the shorter seasons, we're going to see less water used on our freshwater. It's just the way it is. What is kind of confusing, unless I guess I have a question, is on the sewer charges, are there any metered sewers yet?
So I don't have an answer to that question. I guess I would defer that to Mr. Tompkins, our utilities director. Can you come up to the mic, please?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, we don't have metered sewer. We extrapolate it from volumes and level sensors, and then we also use it based on the water usage. So,
great, thank you. And that's why I asked the question, is if it's metered, because that explains to me why the sewer revenues haven't gone down with the water revenues. Thanks. To Mr. Darnell, what else we have here?
That concludes the information that I had to present this evening. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. At this point, we'll go to the city manager report, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Humka.
Thank you, sir. So what I wanted to point out in that is, most of you know that we had several meetings last week. We had a delegation in here. Sorry, I lost my place here since I was following along. But in my report for tonight, I wanted to kind of draw your attention to the Captain's Bay road work that we continue to do. And Chris Laddick had requested while he was at the tail end of his work here that we do a concise two-page report. That's what I attached to the report, so you can see what basically our lobbyists and other people are handing out on the city's behalf. And that's a culmination of quite a few people helping to put that together. We did receive information from the Army Corps that our non-federal sponsor share cost of the dredging, channel dredging project is basically $8,081,000. Remind all of you that you have a candidate you've invited to interview for a city manager. That person arrives tomorrow morning, and there's a calendar of events associated with that. If you have any questions, please let us know. Hope you will participate to the maximum amount possible. There was a meet and greet scheduled for the community as well. That's Wednesday night, 5:30 to 7 p.m. Right here in City Hall. I'm sorry. Thank you. We're going to be looking to start IBU negotiations. The schedule we're looking to start in April 24th from that week. And we are actually making some progress. You know, it's kind of a barometric pressure reading more so than a trend, but right now we're looking basically at 16 vacancies. So we've been hurtling along trying to fill vacancies, and we're getting a few steps ahead instead of one step forward and two steps back. So we'll see if that continues. And that's my report for you.
All right, thank you. Any council members have any questions? Comments? Mr. Humka, the $8 million for the dredging project, has that been allocated yet?
We have all of that allocated through our CMMP process.
Right, and is it $8 million?
I think we have nine, if I have to double check. I think we over kind of are conservative and budgeted 9.
Great. Thanks. No other questions? We'll move on to community input and announcements. And this is a time for the members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, state your name, and everyone gets 3 minutes, and the council will not engage in dialogue. Is there anyone present wishing to speak? Mr. Blakely, you did it last night. All right. Is there anybody on the Zoom or on the phone wishing to speak?
No, sir, but I do have a couple of announcements.
Great. Thank you.
The first one is that we sent out property tax assessment notices on March 24th, and there's a 30-day period in which folks who own property can appeal that value, and that deadline is April 24th. If you have any questions about your assessment or you think there's any errors in it, please call and talk to us about it. And if you have particular questions, we can connect you with the assessor. Most people who have questions or think there's an error, most of them are cleared up short of an appeal. But if the assessor is not able to resolve your appeal to the property owner's liking, those appeals will be heard in May by the city council sitting as the Board of Equalization. But the April 24 is the deadline to appeal those values. And if you need an appeal form or have any questions, just give us a call in the clerk's office. And then I will just kind of repeat Bill's announcement of the reception for city manager candidate Jim Hunt is here tomorrow in this building. And we're gonna do it out here in the lobby of City Hall, not in this room, but out in the lobby. So that'll be from 5:30 to 7. And that's all I had.
Great, thank you. At this point, we're entering a public comment on agenda items, and this is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If they feel they don't want to wait until the item comes up at the regular agenda to comment later during a regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, state your name. Everyone gets 3 minutes, and the council will not engage in dialogue. Does anyone present wish to speak? Madam Clerk, are there any written comments or anybody on Zoom or telephone wishing to speak?
None.
Thank you. We'll move on to public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any items set for public hearing. And there's a 3-minute time limit per person. Come to the podium, state your name. Public hearing is now open for ordinance 2023-02, amending Unalaska Code of Ordinances, section 6.40.050, subparagraph C, senior citizens refund. Does anyone present wish to speak? Madam Clerk, is there anybody on Zoom or the phone?
No, sir.
No written comments?
No.
Thank you. The public hearing is now closed. Up next, we have a work session. We have a motion and a second to go into work session.
I make a motion to go into a work session.
Second.
Moved by Tungle, seconded by Nicholson. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, we will move into the work session. First item on the work session is Unalaska City School District FY24 budget presentation. Mr. Jim Wilson, superintendent.
Vice Mayor Robinson, City Council members, thank you for allowing me to be here tonight. I am Jim Wilson, superintendent of Unalaska City School District. And again, just thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you to everybody who came here tonight. You know, the relationship between the school and City Council is long lasting and something that, please know, is greatly appreciated by everybody. So, next slide. All right, sorry about that. Again, just, you know, thank you to everybody. Thank you to council. Thank you to the students, administration, teachers, community members here to support. You know, the school is greatly appreciated. And also just, you know, in recognition of, you know, the budget committee, they did tremendous work in helping us to put this together. So a tremendous thank you to them as well. Everybody's support's appreciated. And then just for our school board that, you know, does a great job of working on behalf of the community. President Jolene Longo, Bob Cummings, David Gibson, Carrie Mahoney, Danielle Williams, and our student representative, Alexis Rowland, are a big part of the process and, you know, just us continuing to provide an exemplary education. So thank you to all of them as well. Our budget process involves two main revenue streams, state funding and local funding. So I think it's important to recognize that, you know, that's how schools are funded. So if we look at just the state side, the budget committee got together starting in early January. Their first job is to project enrollment. So they projected enrollment to be 346 students. That's a status quo number. That's put into what's called the foundation formula, which is really a complex formula that the state gives us that accounts for a variety of factors: vocational education, special education, rural cost of living. There's a cost equalization, again, for being rural versus urban areas. And then that number comes out, and that's what the state is going to give us. So we're anticipating $3,449,998 in revenue from the state. Now, that number could fluctuate a little bit. If student enrollment goes up, that number will go up. If our student enrollment goes down, obviously we'll receive less money. There's also a lot of legislation you probably heard about, you know, in the state legislature down in Juneau related to the base student allocation. And, you know, our hope is that that number goes up. What we're going to see later on is there's really been a cost shift that has happened over the years. The state has put more of the burden on municipalities for education, and, you know, the state has kind of lessened their own burden. So we've been advocating for an increase to public education funding for years, and it's been flat funded for about 7 years now. So, you know, we're starting to see the end result of that. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. We're hoping that it passes. We didn't build our budget on that because I'm not going to begin to predict what the people in Juneau are going to do, but, you know, we're hoping for the best. And so, you know, if that does change, of course, we'd let council know that. So our local funding calculation is why we're here today. The local funding calculation is based on mills related to the full and true property value in Onalaska. So that's currently about $892 million. That's went up over time, I'm sure, as you're aware, which has led to the city being able to contribute more to the schools, which is just tremendously appreciated. So state statute sets the minimum at 2.65 mills. So the minimum that city council can give to the schools is $2,365,192. But the state recognizes that communities that perhaps have the ability to give more take a lot of pride in the schools that they have and the things that that extra funding can provide. For our school, it's smaller class sizes, it's additional programming, shop classes, world language, music, student activities. You know, all of those things are only made possible because of the city's continued generosity and ability to fund the school to what's considered the maximum level. So that does represent our request today. That has been the, I guess, the habit of council over the years. I understand this council is not committed to that, but again, I think we're very proud of the school system that we have. We're very proud of the students that we have, and we're hopeful that we can continue to provide an exemplary education at the highest possible level. So that request tonight for the general fund is $4,150,242. Looking at that in a little bit different way, you know, our overall general fund budget is $8,015,447. Again, if we were to receive that local funding amount, if the state funding amount was to be there, and then we have some other small amounts that come in through BAG grant, E-rate grant that I write, some other, I guess, small funding amounts, but they're helpful. Every little bit helps. Again, puts our total amount at $8,015,447. You know, I've heard council for the last couple of years ask the question, I think it's a fair question. Why has the city's contribution went up? I hear you. Trust me, I do. You know, if you look at the city and the state contributions on FY20 line, we were getting about $7.4 million. The state's contribution was previously much higher. Well, now that's kind of flipped, right? If we go down to FY24, almost flipped exactly. You know, our hopeful city contribution again is about $4.1 million, but the state's contribution has went down. That's the nature of that flat funding that we're talking about with the BSA. The state in some ways has shifted that burden to the local municipalities, which is why we're advocating so hard for an increase to the BSA. That if the BSA increases, the hope is that maybe then cities won't have to contribute as much money. I mean, it's not just on Alaska, it's statewide, right? That municipalities are struggling with this flat funding to education, and as costs have continued to rise, how do we all pay our bills? So I think we're all in that boat together. But I just thought this did a good job of representing that really all that we've seen in terms of additional revenue is a 1.4% increase. You know, even though the city's contribution is increased, which again is tremendously appreciated. I mean, the city's generosity in funding the school to the maximum available amount is just, has just been tremendous. But we don't necessarily have a million extra dollars in our budget. I wish we did. So once we have an idea of the revenue side of things, kind of looking at the expenditures, and I do apologize, there's a small typo in this. Our general fund expenditures are at the lowest rate since FY21. So just tremendous credit to the administrative team, the district office, everybody. We've worked really, really, really hard to get our expenditures down this year. We're down about $1 million. We'll go through that a little bit later. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure I point that out. Our budget is 100% operating costs. So our operating cost does include personnel. Teaching is a labor intensive, you know, profession is what it is. Put a great teacher in front of kids and you get great results. So that's something that we believe in firmly. But we don't have other items that we can defer. We don't have the ability to not hire a math teacher. We can't defer a capital purchase until later. You know, we need labor to produce our product. And that's just where we are. So we've already made significant cuts. I'll talk about those in a minute. Any additional reductions has a very significant impact. You know, I can't pretend to say what that is, but anytime you start reducing, you know, beyond a certain level, you have to be ready for a different product to be produced. So we're happy with the product we've been producing for you, and we're hopeful that funding can continue to allow us to do that. So our budgetary driving factors, they're similar to your guys', right? Salaries, insurance. I did separate benefits from insurance. I thought it was important to do that. And then energy. So again, if you look at salaries, I mean, we just went through a negotiation cycle where we had a 3-2-3 raise. And even though we've accounted for that raise, we're still down $250,000 in salaries. You know, that's pretty incredible. I think that reflects the work that our team has done to try to bring a very conservative budget to you guys. Insurance, it's up $600,000. You know, that's a monster for us. It's 30% of our overall budget is our insurance costs. I'm not sure what the city runs, but that is a huge number for us. And so, you know, that's something we can't control as part of a negotiated agreement. You know, I believe firmly in taking care of our employees. I think it's a wonderful thing, but that cost has absolutely skyrocketed. So, you know, we're trying to account for that and offset that as well. Benefits you're going to see are down. And again, that's just a reflection of we're reducing positions. You know, I was at council meeting the last couple of times, and I guess we had a different approach maybe than the city. We recognized what our hopeful revenues were, and we made some decisions that, you know, we had to start to do things differently. Vice Mayor Robinson last night talked about, you know, if the revenues aren't going to change, you got to start to look at the picture a little differently. You know, we went ahead and decided that we needed to do that at this point in time. Otherwise, we would have been looking at about a $1.5 million deficit. That's where we were at Christmas time. So we knew that we needed to start to make some changes. So our benefits minus insurance is about 9% of the budget. Energy is about 10% of the budget. We're seeing increases just like the rest of you are in those areas. It brings us to about 93% of our overall budget. A very small amount is supplies, professional services, things like that. But again, we have to have good teachers in front of kids, got to have the lights on, and we got to have heat. Those are kind of the basics. Reductions that we've made, again, a lot of work has went into bringing a balanced budget before you tonight. They weren't easy decisions. You know, every decision that we make affects kids. Every decision that we make affects somebody. I'm proud of the fact that we didn't cut a position. They were all through attrition, but there is an effect there nonetheless. So we've eliminated an assistant principal position, eliminated classroom teacher. It was two previously, but we had a really increase in our special education numbers. So we've reinstated one of those positions there. So one classroom teacher, one paraprofessional through attrition. We We only have a maintenance staff of 2 people, take care of 4 buildings. We have the wood shop, the new alternative school, which is the old UAF building, Eagles View, and then UCS, the main building. We've reduced our maintenance staff to 1.25 maintenance people to take care of those 4 buildings. We do get tremendous support through the city with many of the major things there. And again, that's greatly appreciated, but we realized some savings there, additional savings in professional services and just some other areas. And then the additional salary and benefit savings was realized from some long-term employees leaving and then being replaced by, you know, some lower cost employees. That wasn't intentional. It's just the nature of having folks kind of at the top end of that salary scale and then hire some younger folks along the way. So overall, our reductions are just south of $1 million in the budget. So looking at the big picture, if we would have came to you with the FY24 budget minus any reductions, just status quo, everything as is, we would have been looking at our $9.1 million budget. Tremendous work by staff, again, administrative team, and district office. So what's before you is an $8,190,000 in expenditures. Contrast that with our revenues. We're looking at a $174,000 deficit. We are required by state statute to present a balanced budget, and we are. So that number is easily covered out of our fund balance. Our fund balance number is a little unknown right now, kind of like you guys were trying to figure out how energy has changed. We had about $900,000 in fund balance at the start of this year. We believe it's going to be down to about $500,000. Again, no quotes there because there's a lot of energy things we don't know yet, but we do have sufficient fund balance to be able to cover our deficit. So that kind of wraps up the general fund portion of it. There's also been tremendous funding from City Council through what's known as special revenue funds. So there are 3 historic special revenue funds: community schools, preschool, food services, and those are ones that have been funded by council traditionally. We do come before you tonight with a new request. I fully recognize the position that council is in. That's for a student activities request. But I think as we go through it, I also hope you recognize the place that we're in as well. At last night's presentation, I remember seeing the travel costs have skyrocketed for you guys and the additional amounts that you're requesting in your budget. We've seen those same cost increases. We haven't increased our travel budget in 10 years. And so it just, you know, we're trying really hard to support student activities, recognizing the importance of those. So I'll get into that in a little bit more detail here in a minute. So special revenue funds, what do they provide? Same thing you guys want to provide: sustainable quality of life, right? It's when I get phone calls from parents about wanting to move here. What activities do you have for my kids? What special programs do you offer? You have art, music, world language, foreign language, shop. We love reading and writing. We love math at the school. They never ask about those. They know we're going to have reading, writing, and math, right? And so what are those other things that provide a quality of life? And that's what it is. It's preschool. It's a good lunch program. It's student activities. It's having events in the community and having the school open for events in the community. And that's what all of these special revenue funds help to provide, is those opportunities, not just for our students, but for the entire community. So I think they're essential. The first community, or the first special revenue fund request, rather, is for community schools. That request is for $730,000. That has increased significantly. As you can see, the expenditures have also increased significantly. So I think the logical question is, what is community schools? Many, many years ago, council and the school got together and recognized the school is the centerpiece of the community in many ways. I was just looking at the calendar the other day with our new superintendent, Ms. Hamish. And by the way, it's going to be amazing. So happy that she's here. And we were looking at it. It was amazing for me. I've been here 21 years, right? I take for granted all the stuff that we do. So we're sitting there at a Lions breakfast, and we're recognizing we're helping to host Missoula Children's Theater, which is a part of the PCR. We have the OC banquet this summer, right? So we're supporting that entity. We have the API health fair at the school. We have a homeschool talent show going on. We have a piano recital going on with Hearts and Hands. We have a basketball camp and a volleyball camp and all of these things that we don't just close the doors at 3:30, right? We're open for the community. We're open for all of these events going on through, you know, tragedy and triumph. I've done way too many funerals in the school lately, but we're there for the community when the community needs us. We also have a partnership with the city on the pool. If council's not aware, you know, we pay for the heat, the electrical, we pay for the custodial for that. We pay for the water for that, for the wastewater for that. You know, that comes billed through us. And so that's kind of where community schools came out of. So we all know that those costs have increased over time, and that's why there is the increase in the funding request. The city council has also traditionally funded preschool. We have an amazing preschool program. Again, I think the city, I reflect on this stuff a lot as I'm getting ready to leave, but early childhood education was not a thing 30 years ago. People didn't talk about it. They didn't talk about the importance of a good early childhood education program, but the city thought of it. And they said, wow, we want to have this. We understand the value of a preschool and having a great school system. That comes with a cost. So that request is for $200,000. Ms. Scott and Ms. Meyer do an amazing job in there. We're able to coordinate services between the school, between little kiddos who need it, and just get them off to a great start for their education. So again, you know, that number has remained fairly similar. You see those costs have went up. We've been able to absorb a lot of those within the school budget. We're happy to do that. We understand the value of early childhood education. The third area is in food services. That number is up a lot from last year, but if you look at it historically to FY 20, 21, 22, it's about the same. What happened was we're trying to be really good stewards of the community's money. Last year, we had a fund balance in that area, so we reduced that request because we had some extra money in that area. So we spent that out this year. As you can see, those costs have increased significantly as well. But that number, that request is for $275,000, and it's kind of back to where those numbers have been traditionally. We don't have that fund balance anymore. Which brings us to our new request, which is for student activities in the amount of $140,000. As I mentioned earlier, we're facing the same inflationary costs that council, community members, families, everybody's facing them. We've asked our students to fundraise a tremendous amount of money over the years. I believe in fundraising. Yeah, I was kind of the person that started it. Better be work-based or it better be product-based. We don't want to just put our hand up. I believe in kids working. I believe in that absolutely. But how much do we want them to work? And we're asking our teams to fundraise $40,000, $50,000 a piece. That's a lot. And it's a lot on the community. It's a lot on, you know, all of us. And so you need to reach a point where you just say, is it sustainable anymore to be able to have students fundraise these huge amounts of money? Or is there another way? So we're just trying to find another way. I'm recognizing the importance of activities and the value of those. It's just essential for a well-rounded education. It's, you know, I say it all the time, the day doesn't end at 3:30 and it doesn't end at the schoolhouse doors when you're educating kids. The things they learn in activities, teamwork, citizenship, being a part of something bigger than themselves, those are the skills that we want them to have. That's how we develop the future leaders of our community and of other communities. So again, I think that student activities have an essential place in a high-functioning school. So looking at the numbers, again, we haven't increased this in 10 years. That's on us. I'm the first person to say that. We've tried to put all the money into the classroom. You know, so we've tried really, really, really hard to not increase this amount because I guess as long as I'm here, I'm almost out the door, but you know, we're not gonna cut a teacher to be able to fund activities. You know, both of them are important, but you know, there's only so much money to go around. And so we've just kept this the same and we just dealt with the numbers. Well, when I first started as activities director, and again, I've been here 21 years, but I really didn't know the numbers until 12, 13 when I started, when I became principal. I could buy a round trip ticket for $731. I think we all remember those days fondly. They're $1,500 now if we're lucky, right? And so those costs have just skyrocketed. We've absorbed it. We've absorbed it. We've absorbed it. You know, we just can't continue to do it. So that's where those numbers are. Might wonder, how did we come to $140,000? Huge thank yous to Mr. Humphrey. I asked him early on in recognizing kind of where we were at financially. I said, what do we have just to have status quo? If we wanted the same number of things that we've always had, band, world language, basketball, volleyball, NYO, no extra trips, nothing frivolous, the same stuff that we've always had, what is the cost of that going to be? So he, you know, he figured that out. And again, kudos to him, much appreciated. That amount is about $620,000 to have status quo, given how much things have increased. And that's with fundraising still happening. Please know that. So that's about $147,000 deficit. which is what represents the $140,000 request. Again, recognize the position that council's in, but I also hope that council members understand how much we value student activities and our desire to see those continue at a level that helps to prepare our kids to enter the world. So overall, what we're looking at, we've already detailed all the numbers, but the overall request would be $5,495,242. And I guess just in closing, you know, it's a lot of money. There's no doubt about it. And so I think sometimes if we only look at it as a cost, there's a challenge there. I guess for me as an educator, it's always an investment. What are we investing in? Well, we're investing in kids that want to go to trade school, work here locally. There's so many people that work here locally. I'm just so proud as I come to City Hall and I see folks in the finance department and I see folks operating equipment and, you know, just all over town are graduates. And I hope they're good workers for you guys. We hope they're good workers for the community. That's an investment. And we want to continue to invest in folks who want to enter the military, serve our country in a different way. We want them to have the skills that they need to have. But again, it's an investment. We want to invest in people who want to go to college, who want to come back here, work locally, contribute to our town, our community, also go out to other communities. That's part of growing up. You know, I've heard council talk a lot about it over the years that, you know, we want to create a sustainable community where people want to be here. We believe that we're a part of that. We're a partner in that. We want to be your partner in that. So just thank you for your continued investment in education. It is greatly appreciated. I appreciate your time tonight. I appreciate all of my 21 years here. I want to apologize, first of all. I'm not going to be here in 2 weeks. Please know that is not intentional. I would be here, but both of my kids are graduated from college. So if I'm not there, I will be divorced. That's not a good alternative. I won't be here. But again, just there's other council members, or not other council members, other committee members. Danielle Witter, a former business manager, has offered to be available for questions. I'm available for questions tonight or via email or anytime you want to talk. That does conclude our presentation. Thank you for your support of the school, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. As I've always said, there's no amount of money enough for education. And if we were, I mean, for me as a council member, if I were to fund anything, it would be the school over the nonprofits. It's just so important to have education because that's our future. I'll turn it over to the council. Any questions from the council? Yeah, Ms. Libby.
Yeah, so the new activities fund, can you kind of explain how that would work going down the, you know, year after year, and how you potentially could reduce the ask from the city based on this possibly?
Yeah, certainly. Great question. Thank you. So in the general fund, any money that we don't spend in the general fund has to be returned to the state of Alaska. Yeah, if we don't spend that money, we have to return it. In our special revenue funds, we're allowed to carry a fund balance in those areas. And so that $140,000, we never want to see trips get canceled or things like that. But there are years where that spending goes up and down because we all understand weather in Alaska. So we anticipate, and again, there's a lot of variables here in airline tickets, et cetera. But if that, gosh, we all hope ticket prices don't go up. But if that number was to stay similar, and next year, if we were to have $50,000, $70,000 extra in that fund, we wouldn't need to come back and ask for $140,000 because we're allowed to keep that money in that fund. So that could reduce any future asks in that fund based on how much we're able to keep in there based on trips being canceled, weather cancellations, just a variety of factors. Sometimes teams, not ours, may have ineligibility concerns. So sometimes you just have weekends that don't happen for a variety of reasons. So the hope would be that that wouldn't be a continual ask at that amount.
Thank you.
Ms. Coleman.
So could you kind of spell out for me what kind of activities would be, what groups go out? You've heard of the team, so is this more than just sports teams?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I've always been proud of is that our school is one of the, there's not very many that fund academic and athletic travel. And it's always a frustration to me, right? Because
I was a basketball coach, but also was a student government advisor. And it would always frustrate me when I would see basketball teams on trip after trip, but teams that, you know, groups that couldn't go to a student government conference, couldn't go to a band, and again, not in Alaska, but in other places. So I'm super proud of the fact that it funds World Language, Tsunami Bowl, our band that just flew out tonight. It funds the kiddo that went to the spelling bee. You know, it funds so many different things. World Language, Native Youth Olympics is a cultural experience. It funds basketball and volleyball. So every activity that we offer is a part of that student activity fund. It's not just sports.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the council? Mr. Tungle?
Thank you for the presentation, Mr. Wilson. School is always my favorite, and I always fund it to the max, whatever we can afford. It's the community always proud of the school provided to all the kids, my kids. They all graduated in there. And it's always a talk when you go somewhere else, how much the kids coming from Unalaska are being well teach and learn in school and be able to compete when they go outside. And it's not much word you can say how much people envy our community, the way we treated our kids. And kids, they are our future. And we wanna make sure they get the best education they needed. And it's always been seen when they go out there. And it's because of the program that the school provided. And that's why the city always supported. And I appreciate all the staff and Mr. Wilson. I hope you have a better endeavor on your next endeavor. I wish you well. Thank you.
Mr. Nicholson.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the presentation. It was very informative. And in this community, the thing that drew me to it was the community itself, but the school systems. Now, that is one of the things that in Washington State, there's nothing like this. I mean, and anything that the school needs here, I'll support it 100%. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nicholson. Any further? Well, one good thing is when we see future development in this community, that 2.65 mils means a bit more. And we have the potential of Trident Seep, who's putting a $400 million plant in. So that's going to take it up a considerable amount. And that's probably the primary reason why we've surpassed the state's funding of this. And it's unfortunate we have this year, it is kind of an anomaly in the state legislature. We have 40 brand new legislators. And of those 40, probably 90% of them have never been in that building before or never been elected officials before, and their staff the same way. So it's kind of disconcerting. There's 40 legislators that are brand new. So we didn't get out of the house yet with the increase in the base student allocation. It's looking just like what they passed out of there. It was just a one-time. The Senate will probably sounds like, I mean, I from what I hear, they'll come back with a potential increase, of which the House is going to have to reconcile. So hopefully, I mean, keep your fingers crossed. Call your legislators. Call other people's legislators. So anyway, thank you. At this time, we will receive public comment. Again, come to the mic. You have 3 minutes per person. Does anybody wish to speak?
I would just like to comment on the school budget and presentation, and really encourage council to consider the full funding of the school. Again, The activities, they're just starting to rebuild those programs. Some of those programs that we have missed through COVID, the arts programs, some of the poetry programs, those academic programs that allow kids to travel and to explore and to compete and to really push their skills. That's not just important to them as a well-rounded person, that's important to them as a healthy person. And so I would really encourage the council to continue to fund the school to the fullest possible, because I think it's not just about creating good students, good citizens, and future employees. It's really about creating well-rounded people.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify? Yes. Come to the name, and state your name at the mic, and you've got 3 minutes.
My name is Stefan Nguyen, and I'm a senior at our Unalaska City School District. I think that student activities is a lot more important to the community, because throughout high school, I think every single student has an opportunity to travel, whether it's like going to see Avtech, trade school, student language, Tsunami Bowl, or sports. And I think that's very important because it shows leadership, and it's like a job. It's like, if you don't go, then you'll miss something very important, and it teaches you a lot of responsibilities. I also think that being in student activities allows you to stay out of trouble and staying out of drugs, because in high school, there's something called a TAD violation. And I think that's very important to our future, because seeing how many people are in drugs now and change their lives because of it, I think activities helps you stay out of all that stuff. And I just think student activities is one of the best things throughout high school that you can do.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. And good luck on your future. And you're correct. Activities in the school that do help curb drug use, and education helps curb drug use. So thank you. Is there any further?
Mr. Vice Mayor.
Madam Clerk, do we have anybody on Zoom?
Yes, we do. Frank Kelty has asked to comment. Frank, I just sent you an unmute request.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Frank Kelty, for the record. Longtime former school board member, longtime city council member and mayor. And you can probably guess what I'm going to say, that we're very proud of the school. I have my daughter graduated there in class of 95, one granddaughter class of 20, another granddaughter class of 21. And my last granddaughter is graduating next month, the class of 23. So our family's had a vested interest in that, in the school, for many, many years. We've always been supportive when I was part of the council body and worked really hard to get the council to support the budget when I was on the school board. It's the best investment you can make in Unalaska. I mean, you know so many of the kids that have gone on to great things in the community. I've got two granddaughters in nursing school. One just got her AA in nursing and is working on her 4-year degree. I got another one in nursing school in the University of Nevada, Reno. And so you can't go wrong by funding education to the best of our ability in the community. It's a great investment in Unalaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelty. Unalaska can't go wrong, because we've got a great group of teachers and administrators. Is there anybody else that, yeah, Margie?
No, sir.
Great. Oh, can you come to the podium, say your name?
My name is Shelby Sheshnipa. I'm a student at UCSD High School. I'm actually a senior. And without travel for like educational clubs, I wouldn't be up here comfortable speaking to an audience or even get an internship at the job I worked this summer at OC. It really helped with my public speaking and becoming a leader. And I think it's really important to fund like activities in school to help people come out of their shell. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelby. I know you'll go far because we're cousins. I had to put that plug in there. So second item, if there's no other public testimony, second item was on the work session. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, back again. I'm Joni Scott. I have been here for 19 years teaching. I've been coaching for 6 years. I am also a parent of a future high school student, and I hope she has the opportunity to participate in student activities. I recognize all of your efforts and contributions you have given over these last 19 years that I have lived in our wonderful city of Onalaska, and I am grateful for your contributions financially and emotionally that you have done for our school district. I'm grateful to you as a parent, as a coach, and as well as an educator. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. You want to say something, Deneen?
Yeah, I just want to say how proud I am of all the students that showed up tonight. And I think this is the first time I've ever seen students here. So I'm super proud of all you guys for coming and, you know, standing up for your own education. And thank you. And, you know, you're welcome anytime. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Is there anybody else? Second item on the work session is a final review and follow-up questions regarding the draft FY24 capital and major maintenance plan, rolling stock replacement plan, and facility major maintenance plan. Mr. Humka, I'll turn this over to you to introduce to the council.
Thank you. So tonight I've asked Mr. Rufus, who's present, to present this installment of the CMMP. We'll have Scott up here to present the rolling stock and facilities major maintenance plan after that. And I just want to do that because I want to point out to all of you, we really are working a lot behind the scenes. And actually, I think they're working faster than I'm typing memos to you. So I thought it's probably better for them to come and present the changes because I didn't update the memo and it's different. So point out the few things that we've worked to change and reduce or take out. So with that, Thomas, if you'd like to walk us through the CMMP.
Good evening, Mayor and Council and Vice Mayor. Just to run you down on the items that have changed since the last version of the CMMP that you've seen and what is inside the current existing packet. To start with, the McCushion Geothermal Project has had $2 million in the external funding. We had a correction that seems to have been an estimate that was given to us. Somebody was rounding rather than actually giving us the direct numbers out of the PPA. So that has been amended to $1.85 million to, you know, reflect the actual agreement. Moving down to the general fund public works projects, the facilities maintenance plan has had a couple of changes made to it in order to reflect changes in our funding goals for that. The value has gone down a total of $123,000 from the facilities maintenance program. That reflects a $32,000 removal of painting projects from the general fund and $91,000 of painting from the housing proprietary fund that would have gone towards this project. We are planning on still conducting those painting projects. They're just being funded out of the operations budget of the public works budget. So that that is reflected as a change. And then finally, the third change is that the HVAC controls for 11 city facilities, that line item has been removed. That was funded under last year's CMMP out of their maintenance budget that was budgeted already. So it was basically double accounted. So that has been updated. And as that project has basically been completed with a couple of outstanding invoices, that's been adjusted and removed from this year's CMMP. So to kind of summarize all of that, the total for this year's CMMP that's been removed is $706,827. So you should be able to see that reflected in last year's version or last meeting's version to this meeting's version. Overall, the general fund is now at $18,040,331. You'll see that on that kind of shorter version of the sheet there. That reflects just FY24's requests. And if you have any questions.
I'm working to get the updated sheet to Margie to put up there for you. You have one in front of you.
At this point, we'll have council discussion. Are there any questions?
Question.
Ms. Coleman, go ahead.
So you're moving the painting to operating budgets for public works. Why was the painting moved out of the facility maintenance plan into that? And is that going to be the standard? I guess I figured painting was going to be part of the... It seems to be a new thing, and now we keep changing. We just keep changing. Is this just a learning thing, or I guess I was like trying to figure this one out.
I'm sorry, I was doing two things. What was the question?
Sorry. Yes, I'll direct my question to you. Sorry. The painting. Talking about moving into the operating budget for public works instead of into the maintenance plan.
So if you recall last night, I kind of spoke to how things were getting budgeted as projects and maybe the way they're coded, et cetera. And I think, honestly, this would have come from the housing fund as it's proprietary for city projects. However, in the changeover of our public works directors, and right at the time we were trying to get these things, the discussion was never had with the housing program. So I suggested we go ahead and put it in the general fund because I didn't think there's the money there at the time. Now they're moving it into the actual, what they do for a typical maintenance budgets, which they also have projects in there. Realize most of the thing, here's an issue that has continually come up since I've been here. And I think part of it, I'm just gonna say it because you know I'm not an accountant, but we've had several finance directors since I've been here, and every time they wanna change it because they don't understand why we put painting in here because they can't capitalize on it. Even though it's a comprehensive major maintenance plan. So there's lingo, I think, happening between the auditors and what they look for and how we do things here by doing it all in one document. And I think that's been a struggle. However, I don't want you to think that we're just trying to move things around to save money because it's obviously we're paying for it one way or another. So I don't want the concept, I think we're trying to hide something, but that is that large drawer I was telling you about that they would just apparently put some money in there and then they would bill it accordingly because that would be the running budget for maintenance. We really wanted to see a closer look. So the current the current public works director is working to refine that. So it's not as much we're hiding anything, we're just trying to figure out what the best place to show things with some turnover. I think discussions that we would have normally had didn't happen. And this is where it is. Frankly, those two pieces of city real estate, I haven't looked closely at the fourplex. I live in the Aplex and there's paint peeling off in sheets. I think they've done some touch up last year on that, but it needs maintenance. It's 10 years old. remember it wasn't showing up as a maintenance plan at all. So the facilities maintenance plan itself as a component of this document is something relatively new as of, I think, last year. We were only presenting to you rolling stock plans before that. And it was all coming out of a plan that they had, but it wasn't, you know, when these things were over $50,000, that's the threshold. So when you have a $300,000 paint contract, for example, for the school, when I first got here, that wasn't in it. It was just in a budget out. So there's this ongoing thing between how to show major maintenance with capital improvements, because maintenance isn't capital. This is taking care of capital, right? And then there's the whole saga of leadership changes and looking at how to report things better. And I think, admittedly, I'd wish we would have looked at it sooner to see how much money we have from the housing fund, which, as you know, there's 5 vacant units for at least 8 months. So I know it's down. I was just calculating myself, reconciling the numbers that Clay was putting on there, because those are some I'm really familiar with, and they're small numbers. I can do that. But we're trying to make sure that we're showing things in the right places. It may not be the right way, but it needs done, unless you also would like to take it out and we'll put it in the housing fund as a project next year.
Thank you. And I think it's important to, I like the fact that you have this whole maintenance plan, because I think it's important to kind of really keep in mind that when we continue to build assets, it's all great, but there's going to be reoccurring costs, and we're going to see those now popping up in this plan that say you're going to do this. Now, guess what? It's going to cost you. You're going to see this, you know, pop up again and again. It doesn't go away. It's easy for us to think about it going away, but it's going to be reoccurring to some degree. So thank you.
Have you on the record saying it's easy to think things go away? I don't think they go away, but we have systems and we kind of combine things here. Just as an aside, you've all heard me say this in the past, larger communities have tons of committees, a zoning committee and all this. I think we're trying to be as efficient as possible doing things with the people we have and the amount of meetings we have, because it gets stressful in terms of like budget time, right? But there's only so much work all of you can do. And we're not the big city. So I think sometimes some of these, it's just my layman's experience across 4 communities, that sometimes all of the things that you do elsewhere don't apply here. I'm trying to do things, maintenance plan with capital improvements. You can probably do that somewhere else. That's how we do it. So it's a kind of a discussion to have every year. And
we're on Alaska, the exception.
The exception. It's a new slogan. Okay. Did that answer your question, Councilman? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Yeah, I'm gonna circle back on this question. And when we do these capital projects and we're in the budgeting process, I think it was suggested before that as we're budgeting, the line item for depreciation is budgeted for any potential capital projects that would be, I assume, completed within that fiscal year, or is that depreciation line item increased once that project's completely done, where so it would show up in a different year?
That sounds like a big numbers question that I'm not ready to answer, but I hope Clay is still on the phone. I would like him to answer that question for you, Councilman. Clay, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. No, I don't think we're changing the depreciation budget for estimated projects completed, because I think most of the time we can't really estimate exactly when it's going to be completed. But I think it's kind of a negligible impact on the city overall if we miss a depreciation budget, because it isn't a cash basis expense. So there's little danger if we understate our depreciation budget and come in a little bit over it, it doesn't really have an impact on our cash position or our ability to pay our bills.
Did that answer your question?
No, because I guess the other part of that is the ultimate question is, what when we do these projects, say an 8 to
$40 million project, whatever the dollar amount may be, what is the effect on the rates? When we do projects, like if we do the water tank on the water department, you know, it's a $9 million project. How does that affect the rates and depreciation as part of that? So is that factored in the budgeting process?
No, not until the project's completed, but I'll defer to the Director of Public Utility to discuss the impact on rates. Yes, it would impact the rates. Ultimately, it definitely would.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Mayor, members of City Council. What happens is when they do the rate study, then they get a copy of our document and they look at the future schedule of capital projects, and they do take those into account on a forward-looking basis to calculate the rates.
Thank you.
Any further questions? We'll move into the next portion of this.
Mr. Vice Mayor Robinson and Council, I appreciate you having me up here again to discuss this. Rolling Stock, last time we spoke, Council asked me to take another look. As well, I also have learned a few things from the private sector and in regards to the flatbed, which we'll talk about first. We do have the private sector that's reached out to us and let us know that that they are willing and able to step up as far as the towing. It was never our intention to become a towing service with the city. It was just something that was added on just because of all the derelict vehicles that we've had around town. So it's kind of a process that the Public Works Department has been engaged in a lot more, and that would help out. Truly, it was the flatbed that was shared between the Public Works road crew and the facility maintenance that we're trying to replace. And at the time, we thought that it would be a good idea to include a rollback type vehicle. Since then, I've had discussions with our our roads crew and our facility maintenance. The road crew is able to convert the dumping truck, and it has a flatbed type system that will go on to that. They can use that for the large flatbed and as well share with the supply when they need that large flatbed. And then the facility maintenance that would also share that flatbed. What they really were interested in the rollback was for moving some of the kind of medium equipment, the forklifts, as well as our small loaders like we use at the landfill to get that. So with that said, what I think the future plan will be is to come back before you in the future and look for a trailer that could be towed behind a vehicle, like a 20,000 pound trailer that could tow, that would handle those type of equipment. And I think what we would like to do is just pull that $200,000 off of the rolling stock, because we found alternative uses that we'll be able to do that with. So we're not gonna move that forward. Our recommendation is to pull that. The other portion of the rolling stock that was the four patrol cars that we recommend that we replace for public safety. And I think it was Vice Mayor Robinson thought we should look at that and see how the patrol cars are used and personnel and with public safety. And so I met with the chief police or the acting chief, had those discussions. And really what I want to kind of point out with the rolling stock plan that we work on and that was developed, I believe, 10 years ago, 2008, thank you. How that really works is is public safety really puts the mileage on the cars, and then those get handed down, and the rest of the departments actually put the time on the vehicles. So we're replacing the four vehicles at public safety, but the vehicles that really need to be replaced are the vehicles that we would be surplusing out. So the clerk's vehicle is one of those. That's a 19-year-old vehicle. That will be replaced with one of the hand-me-down vehicles from public safety. That vehicle will be surplused. The other vehicle is one of the city hall vehicles. It's also a 19-year-old vehicle and was scheduled to be replaced in 2020 if we followed the plan. Third vehicle is the engineering vehicle. It's a 22-year-old vehicle that would be replaced with a public safety vehicle. These vehicles that I'm discussing that are in the other departments will be moved into the surplus. And the fourth vehicle is a 21-year-old vehicle, and it was scheduled to be replaced in 2018. Also, what we're requesting for those vehicles is $280,000 to replace those four vehicles. In year 2022, for the budget of FY23, council approved $144,000 for the expenditure of patrol cars for the public safety. That money was never utilized. So what will happen is we have two choices with that. We could, three choices really. We could come before you, request a budget request change, and apply that $144,000 to the newer vehicles that we're wishing to purchase this year. We could rush out and try to purchase some vehicles before the end of the fiscal year this year, none of which I recommend. What we recommend that we do is to just allow that money to essentially lapse or go back into the general fund. And then we would request this additional $280,000. So essentially what we're requesting in addition to last year would only be $136,000 if we take the $144,000 that we did not utilize last year, so to get the four patrol cars. And so that would be the addition of the patrol vehicles and the other department replacing for the $280,000. The other rolling stock request is the grader. And the grader is 19 years old. We have three graders. It's the oldest grader in our fleet. That grader has had a broken boom that we've replaced in its time. It's got a little over 40,000 hours on it. In 2015, we remanned the engines, transmission, gearbox. Those are still already showing their, not already, but those are showing their sign and are anticipated to need to be remanned again in the next coming year or two. Currently, the maintenance and repairs that we spent on the grader that we are recommending that we replace is a little over $536,778. Thing I want to point out is if we continue to follow the maintenance plan like we have, it's really starting to show what I think council's vision was back in 2008. If you remember yesterday when we presented our operating budget in the vehicle maintenance department, that was one of the only out of my division that I had a reduction that was below the percentage. So that was a minus 3%, and that was for repair and maintenance. And I had another minus 3% in supplies. And that's not because we're tightening our belt or we're which we are doing, and we're also looking for other ways to save. But that's really, we just haven't needed to buy those additional parts, and we haven't needed to stock that additional equipment because we have a younger fleet now, because we are following this plan. And it just shows that it's showing up in our maintenance and repair. If we do defer these things, we're going to get stuck back in that program of higher maintenance costs, more parts needed to be on hand, and then multiple vehicles needing to be replaced at one time, opposed to the slower rate that we're able to do it at this time. And that's really all I have for the rolling stock. Are there any questions from council?
Council, any questions, comments? Ms. Coleman.
Okay, so let me just make sure I got this straight. So for FY23, you have two vehicles patrol that we had budgeted for, put in rolling stock, that were not purchased, for a total sum about $144,000. So you are suggesting that just goes back into general fund, and then this coming fiscal year, you're going to come and say, hey, remember, I need to get these purchased. Is that it? In that show, what you said?
That's close. Okay. It was actually three vehicles that were purchased that we were requesting from council last in fiscal year 2023. And that was for Chevy Tahoes. What had happened is we actually did those orders. Personnel changes. So I think philosophies changed at the same time, as well as I think there was recognition that that would be a bad idea to have some Fords and some Chevys in our fleet and have to carry the additional parts, as well as there was supply chain issues with the vehicles. So they weren't going to be shipped for another year. So we wouldn't even be seeing those probably this year. So that was why they decided to cancel that order. Certainly we could, and that's kind of my point of if we were to try to utilize that $144,000 in good faith, we would need to come before council and say, hey, we no longer want to buy Chevy Tahoes. We would like to buy these Ford Explorers that we currently carry in our fleet, so that council understood that we changed the idea of the spending that was granted in the last budget cycle of FY23. And so that's why those vehicles were terminated because of the supply chain issue and the philosophy of the vehicle. And yes, so the plan is, or the thought is now, is that money's going to roll back into basically it will be returned back to the general fund or carry over in the project. And so really, you could look at it as we zero out the account again, and that we come before you and we're asking for the $280,000 to get the four vehicles. Or you could look at it as we didn't spend that money last year. We're going to take that money and apply it to this next purchase that we're requesting today.
Okay, so on my sheet, I've got four Tahoes here. This is the one that was emailed today, I think. So four or three? Yeah, you're saying
there's four. Correct.
Okay, so four for a total.
There was three that were ordered.
Okay, so we got four outstanding that
was canceled
for $280,000. Yes. So
that's correct.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. I just want to say I was all prepared to talk about the flatbed, but boy, thank you for resolving that. Thank you to management for looking at a bigger picture here and not duplicating some resources that we already have on the island, reaching out to community and recognizing their contributions and what can help. I know that it was kind of an opportunity maybe to feel something. They feel like it wasn't being served, but hopefully a new plan going forward, it will get served, and will be able to facilitate vehicle movings the way we want to have them done and when we want to have them done. So thank you so much for negotiating that and looking at a really big picture. And like, those are the kind of things that I think I really do appreciate. It's some of these little things that try really hard, even the little, small money. I mean, it's $200,000, but in the big picture, it's not a lot, but it's a lot, and it means a lot. So thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Councilman Coleman.
Great. So the next step is, after we get this equipment storage building done, is to create a motor pool so we don't have duplication of equipment just sitting there. We can probably reduce the number of loaders we have, the number of backhoes we have, just overall equipment alone, by putting in a motor pool instead of everybody having their own vehicle. And then that's another thing is, our last manager, I think, probably felt that every city employee should have a vehicle to drive. I kind of differ on that. We need to get back to stewardship of government and not providing those vehicles to everybody. So just people that are key positioned. So thanks, Mr. Bell and Mr. Trundle.
Yeah, Vice Mayor Robbins kind of hit on one of the subjects I was going to bring up, and is, you know, the number of take-home vehicles. And I think, you know, that could still be looked at, whether, you know, it's something that is necessary or if it's something that can be changed over time through policy and attrition and all that. I did just want to make a comment about, you know, what's presented here as far as the rolling stock. I was in favor of the flatbed, by the way. I thought that was a good solution. But it's good to see a little more confidence in the numbers that are presented. I know last year we had at least one piece of equipment. A number was just kind of thrown at the wall with no justification as to that number. So I have a little more confidence in what's being presented here. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you. Mr. Tungle.
Yeah, thank you. I know I'm one of the ones that questioned about the flatbed, so I appreciate that. But I thank you. I think this looks good, especially with the grader. I think not just maintenance. When it sits in the shop, it's being fixed. That means we're wasting time not being able to do the job that we need to do out there, having sitting it in the shop. So it's just not maintenance that being spent. It's the time that needed to be out there working and clearing up the road is one priority that missing when it end up in the shop and being maintained. And that grader is pretty old and it needs to be replaced. I know it's the biggest item on this, and I'm pretty sure that will be worth it to be able to purchase that one, and it's really needed. Those road crew are having a tough time, and we've been hiring somebody else's to help out because we cannot keep some of our equipment running because of being moved. So, and I like the numbers you presented this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trungle.
Could I add just one more thing on the grader? We have a thing that's the state of readiness for us. We have three graders. When one goes down, then we only have two. And that's our situation that we're in today. We have one that's got some bushing issues, so we have two. And if we look at the roads, minus the snow removal that we have, they're all, unfortunately, on the opposite ends of town. So it is difficult to meet the needs of the community with two graders. So that's an additional piece of information for you.
Thank you. Is there anything further on rolling stock replacement? Do we have anybody in the public on rolling stock replacement? Is there anybody in Zoom?
No, sir.
Let's move on to facility major maintenance plan.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Robinson and Council. Before, when I was presented this, I had the painting projects in here, and you've heard the confusion and conversation of that. I believe that those got moved into different buckets of money, just for different ways that we account for them as far as capital project versus assets that are and funds like proprietary fund and such. So really that kind of leaves me with two major projects that I brought before you. The other thing I want to point out is that I've inherited some of this stuff. So I've had to work through that process and try to gain that ownership of it. So forgive me if things get a little bit trippy sometimes. But the two that I'm before you for is the utility panel that we talked about at the city's warehouse. And that is a an OSHA issue. We need to maintain a 3-foot clearance around it. The way it's currently sits in the shop, it's impossible to do that unless we give up serious real estate that we need to store our items in the warehouse. I was shocked at how much it costs to move a panel. But the reasoning is once we touch that panel, it changes the code. We have to adopt to today's code requirements from what the code requirements were when that building was built. And the current conduit that was used to install that panel is smaller than what the code requires today. So it's not just moving the panel, it also requires all the conduit to be replaced as well, which every outlet, all the lighting, which is also where we included the LED lighting while we're up there replacing that conduit and runs. And that was a cheap add-on, was we might as well go with LED lights to enjoy some of the savings in the electricity that that we currently use with the fluorescent lights that we have in there today. There's 38 fluorescent units in there. The estimate that came in is about $7,000 to replace all those. So it's relatively a low cost while we're already up there doing the other work. The other part of that is that the disconnect on the outside of the building is in disrepair, and that just needs replaced for safety issues. So we're gonna have to do that either way. So that's what that $152,500 would cover. And the other thing is the air intakes on the sewer wastewater building. And there's 3 intakes. One is about 5 feet by 5 feet, roughly. And it's ingesting sand and rocks through the wind. We've changed that to metal filters from the fiber filters they used before. It also is when the wind is blowing and the snow, it's driving the water and the rain into the building, which is compromising the building. And we want to protect that building. On the other side of the building, there's a smaller intakes there, and that also covers to get those 3 hoods built. There's not one that you can order, so we actually have to have those fabricated from scratch. And that's really the two major maintenance projects aside from the painting that we discussed earlier.
Any questions from council? Thank you, Mr. Brown. And anybody on Zoom or in the pub, on the phone?
No, sir.
Nobody signed up? Thank you.
Mr. Vice Mayor, if I may.
Yes,
I would just like to, I don't think it's forgotten among any of you, but I just think for the record, I'd like to really thank the staff and point out, you know, at this particular time, there's 4 of us that have been directors here for quite a while. It's myself, Peggy, Margie, and Roger. And we have either vacancies or, you know, acting positions, which we have people stepping up and doing that. And some of this is new to them. And they've really done a really good job. And I was initially nervous because 1 is my first time courting a lot of these things. And 2, we have a lot of new people. And it's really been a chance for change to look at a new direction of how we do things. And I'm really appreciative of the things that You know, Steve is a recent promotion to a director. He's been here a long time, but just it is different. I mean, as you would imagine, moving up in your role. And they've all been extremely helpful in putting these things together and talking through things that I'm happy with where we are going at this point in time. I almost wish we had this type of relationship for all the time I've been here. So I would tell you that I feel it's a little bit of a mess here because we've got some updated things and not, but honestly, I'm very pleased that we're honing in on numbers and these guys are really digging in, jumping in. It's an interesting situation right now, but I'm very pleased myself. So I hope you will understand that.
Thank you. So next, what we have is, like I said, the stewardship and government. We've heard the capital, our proprietary fund presentations to the budget. We've heard our main budget. We've heard the school budget and the CMMP. And now we've got to make numbers match. And the big question is, do we budget a deficit or do we balance a budget? So like I said earlier in the meeting, at the beginning of the meeting, where the rubber hits the road, we have to determine good stewardship of government.
Well, you know, we had some discussion, again, feel free to allow me to address that particular point. We've had 2 days of going through budgets and it's been a rather busy week. As you know, it's still gonna be a busy week. And I think we will be able to have discussions about our estimates, our revenue projections. We've been conservative. You see today some of the numbers that are coming in and like coming in way over. It's been a privilege that I think we've had a long time here to budget conservatively on both ends and have excess, but I think we're gonna have to take a little closer look. Am I concerned that we can't make those meet based on some of the data that we are looking at? Not overly concerned. Again, I'm green, but I've sat out here for my seventh budget cycle with you now. And I'm not overly concerned at the gap that I see thus far. And I have confidence that our finance team and our utilities, public works, planning, well, your planning guy right now, not so good, but we can work together and answer those. So just give us a week here to 2 weeks for the next time and we'll give you some information back.
Right. And there's two other things that are could directly affect our revenues in a drastic way. There was a lawsuit filed from the Alaska Native Village Council presidents and Tanana chiefs against NOAA last Friday. And their basic, in a nutshell, what they want to do is shut down the trawl fishery in the Bering Sea. There's also the issue of the sanctuary that St. Paul had wanted to put around its island. It has the potential to disrupt the management of probably one of the most lucrative parts of the Bering Sea, which we directly benefit from. So those are things that are directly could possibly affect us in the you know time to come. And I am probably one of the very few. I think just two of us were here during the crash of King Crab, where the city had to borrow from the processors, had to have that processors advance the sales tax just to make payroll. Don't ever want to see that again. So thank you, Ms. Coleman.
Thank you. Since we're still in the work session, thank you for it reminded me of one other thing. I just want to touch base on is something I've been thinking about. Back to the CMMP. Sorry, guys, I totally spaced on this one. But quickly, the 3-point looking for it for Captain's Bay improvement, the 3.1, 3.2, basically that's designated as part of our contribution should we get any kind of grant funding of this next fiscal year for that section. That's the placeholder for our what we might have to contribute. And I will make this proposal during our budget cycle, but just give everybody a heads up. I am going to propose that particular amount lines in really good with our 1% special funds
that we would make in a year. That would be a designation I'd like to make that for our. So maybe when we get to budget cycle, I can address that then. But I just want to give people a heads up that that is, I'm going to say that, yes, I will approve that money, but I would like to see it coming out of 8%. So thank you.
Thank you. Can I get a motion and a second to return to regular session, please?
I make a motion to go back into the regular session.
Second.
Moved by Tungle, seconded by Coleman. And without any objection, we are now in regular session. Now, we're, persons wishing to speak in the regular agenda items must sign up with City Clerk, a 3-minute time limit from per person. First up is Ordinance 2023-02, second reading, amending Unalaska City, Unalaska Code of Ordinances, Section 6.40.050, subparagraph C, Senior Citizen Refund. We have a motion and a second to adopt Ordinance Number 2023-02.
I move to first reading, right?
No, this is adopted. We had the first reading already.
Move to adopt Ordinance 2023-02.
Second.
Moved by Coleman, seconded by Mr. Nicholson. City Manager.
Yes, thank you. So this is an issue that came up relatively recently. One meeting, I think the early meeting in March, we talked about changing the formula or increasing the amount and how we will process applications. Our clerk went through and did a lot of research and presented that to you. And tonight she has some new information and a presentation. Oh, she's just going to present it.
Nothing new.
My mistake.
Like the city manager said, prior council action on this ordinance includes a thorough discussion of the issues at your meeting on March 9, followed by a directive from council to bring back an ordinance to increase the senior citizen sales tax refund to $400. And change the residency requirements to include voter registration at an address in Alaska or qualification for the Alaska PFD. On March 28th, you saw the ordinance for the first time and scheduled it for public hearing and second reading tonight. And that public hearing has been held. And so now it is up for adoption. Council can still choose to proceed with the ordinance as presented or amended. And you could still choose to do nothing and leave code as it is. Staff recommends adoption.
Thank you. Is there any council discussion? Ms. Libby?
So looking at the next thing that's on the agenda that has to do with this, to kind of bring the two in line, it might help with seniors actually not missing deadlines on one of them. The exemption for city property tax is due on the first.
Let's keep this to the present.
It is actually. And so what I would like to do is amend this one to be due on the 1st of March so that they both are in line to be due at the same time. So I'd like to amend this ordinance to be due on March 1st versus March 31st. And so I just kind of want to see what the rest of the council really has to say about it before we actually go through that process. So if anybody else has any comment on that.
Would there be any problem, I guess, with finance department on that issue?
I don't know if we had a discussion. Margie, did you have? Because I'm concerned about having two programs due on the same time with the same amount of processing, that alone. So we can meet our obligations. I assume it's staggered for a reason. And then I don't know what the answer would be on the finance. So I have to look into that. But
go ahead, Margie.
So the senior citizen property tax exemption application is due March 1st each year. I do not recommend changing that because we need to get those exemption applications in time to include them in our assessment notices, the property tax assessment notices that go out later in the month of March. March 24th is when we mail them out this year. And I have not had an opportunity to check state code Title 29 to see if we're allowed to change that date, because we provide that, the city provides that exemption with, at the authorization of the state of Alaska. We follow Title 29 on that. There's a there's certain required exemptions that the state requires that we provide, and then there's some alternate ones that I would just have to check code. Excuse me. So I do not recommend changing at all the property tax exemption application date. Councilmember Luby's comment or concern is that there are two dates in March that seniors have to hit for things that are available only to senior citizens. March 1st for the property tax and March 31st for this. Said that wrong. Yeah, for the sales tax. So, you know, the next item on the agenda is to senior citizens who did not apply for the property tax exemption in a timely manner, and they're asking you folks to waive that. And so she's thinking it would make it easier for everybody to have the two deadlines on the same date. I don't think it will cause any process, any problem at all as far as processing those two things if you make the application period, the deadline for the sales tax refund the same day as the property tax. It's, that's not going to matter as far as the processing that we have to do. What it will do is give 1 month less to seniors to apply for the senior citizen refund. They would have to do it within a 2 month window as opposed to a 3 month window. Start January 1st and take them through the end of March right now. If you change it, as she's suggesting, you would take it, you know, just for a 2 month window. And that's, again, that's up to you folks.
I like the 3 month window. Let's poll the council. Mr. Bell, what do you think?
I, at this point, I don't see any sense in changing either one of these ordinance or resolutions. So I don't think I'll support that.
Mr. Nicholson.
I'd be in support of just keeping them as they are stated now.
Ms. Coleman.
I'm open to the change.
Mr. Tungle.
I think I'll support what's presented.
Like I said, I think I like the 3 month window for them. I wish I could make the property tax exemption 3 months, but we are bound by Title 29 on that. The more time, the better for to be able to get these, you know, these seniors exemptions and refunds. So I would support keeping it the same. Doesn't look like you have the support from the council to put it forward. So, great. Is there any further discussion? Madam Clerk, is there anybody signed up in the public?
No, sir.
Thank you. So at this point, the motion is to amend Unalaska Code of Ordinances, Section 6.40.050, subparagraph C, regarding the senior citizens refund on taxes. So at this point, we will, I'm requesting a roll call vote. There is no amendment. We are voting on the very motion we made, right? Yes. Right. So, yeah, Ms. Luby is declaring that she has will benefit from this, but it's not a substantial benefit. I'm really glad it doesn't meet the 5% of income requirements. That would be horrible. Thank you. But at this point, let's have a roll call, please.
Okay, on the motion to adopt ordinance 2023-02, Mr. Robinson.
Yes.
Mr. Tungle.
Yes.
Ms. Coleman.
Yes.
Ms. Luby.
Yes.
Mr. Bell.
Yes.
And Mr. Nicholson.
Yes.
With a roll call vote of 6-0, resolution 2023-12, authorizing waivers for failure to timely, or for the timely, to file timely applications for senior citizens' property tax exemption. We have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2023-12.
I move to adopt resolution 2023-12.
I'll second.
Moved by Tungle, seconded by Luby. And at this point, we will turn it over to manager to introduce.
Thank you. I'm going to play the same game there since Madam Clerk put this work together. I'm happy to cover this for us and you should get us through faster than me fumbling my way. Margie.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. So the city provides an exemption for property taxes for the first $150,000 in assessed value of real property that's owned and occupied by residents who are 65 years of age or older. The deadline to submit that application is March 1, and we advertise the deadline around town, and also past applicants receive direct notice of the application in the mail. Two seniors, Abby Woodridge and Howard Henning, filed their applications late, but have written letters of appeal asking that the deadline be waived and their applications be accepted. Our code states that for good cause shown, council may waive a claimant's failure to make a timely application and authorize the assessor to accept the application as if timely filed. Council has authorized such waivers at least 9 times in past years. Adoption of this resolution will authorize those waivers and allow the exemptions for both of the seniors. And staff makes no recommendation regarding this council decision.
Thank you. I don't think I voted against one of those 9 that the exemptions, and I support this one. Any council discussion on this? Ms. Libby.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment where, again, it goes back to the date, and it does get really confusing. March 1st, March 31st, especially when you're a senior, it, you know, becomes a little harder to keep track of those dates. And so I can understand how they missed this one, but yet still was able to meet the other deadlines. So I just wanted to note that, but I'll support it.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, is there anybody signed up from the public?
No, there's not.
Nobody on Zoom or anything?
Mr. Mayor, may I interrupt? I obviously didn't take notes or wasn't listening. Was there a motion and a second to adopt this resolution?
The motion was made by Mr. Tungle, seconded by Luby.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that.
So the motion is to adopt resolution 2023-12, authorizing waivers for failure to file timely applications for the senior citizen property tax exemption. May I have a roll call, please?
Certainly, sir. Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Pullman?
Yes.
And Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
With a vote of 6-0, that motion carries. And congratulations to our seniors that skated in. fast approaching that that time period here. This brings us to the directives to manager. Are there any directives to the manager? If so, I need a motion and a second. Hearing none, we go to community inputs. This is a final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. So 3-minute time limit applies. Are there any further announcements?
Mr. Vice Mayor, if I could, I'd just like to announce that I will be gone next week. I'm flying to Tennessee for a family function. So I'm going to ask Ms. McLaughlin to serve as the acting city manager for the time I'm gone. Just basically a week. I should be back in time for the next meeting. And our council clerk, Margie, is going on vacation. So Karen will be here at our next meeting. Right. So
cool.
In case you need either one of us, you know why we're not around.
I am flying out on the 20th, and I'll be gone for a week also, or 22nd, I'm sorry. Well, we've reached the completed the items in the agenda, and here we are. I'll adjourn this at 8:20.